Good day, and welcome to the Quanta Services fourth quarter and year-end 2015 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Kip Rupp. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sabrina, and welcome everyone to Quanta's conference call to review fourth quarter and full year 2015 results. Before I turn the call over to management, I have the normal housekeeping details to run through. If you would like to have Quanta news releases and other information emailed to you when they occur, please sign up for email information alerts by going to the Investors and Media section of the Quanta Services website at quantaservices.com. You can also access Quanta's latest earnings releases and other investor materials such as press releases, SEC filings, presentations, videos, audiocast, conference calls, and stock price information with the Quanta Services Investor Relations app, which is available for iPhone, iPad, and Android mobile devices for free at Apple's App Store and at Google Play. Additionally, investors and others should note that while we announce material financial information and make other public disclosures of information regarding Quanta through SEC filings, press releases, and public conference calls, we may also utilize social media to communicate this information. It's possible that the information we post on social media could be deemed material. Accordingly, we encourage investors, the media, and others interested in our company to follow Quanta and review the information we post on the social media channels listed on our website in the Investors and Media section. A replay of today's call will be available on Quanta's website at quantaservices.com. In addition, a telephonic recorded instant replay will be available for the next 7 days, 24 hours a day, that can be accessed as set forth in the press release. Please remember that information reported on this call speaks only as of today, February 24th, 2016, and therefore you are advised that any time-sensitive information may no longer be accurate as of the time of any replay of this call. This conference call will include forward-looking statements intended to qualify under the safe harbor from liability established by the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These forward-looking statements include all statements reflecting Quanta's expectations, intentions, assumptions, or beliefs about future events or performance, or that do not solely relate to historical or current facts. Forward-looking statements involve certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions that are difficult to predict or are beyond Quanta's control, and actual results may differ materially from those expressed or implied in any forward-looking statements. For additional information concerning some of the risks, uncertainties, and assumptions that could affect Quanta's forward-looking statements, please refer to the company's annual report on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2014, and its other documents filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which may be obtained on Quanta's website or through the SEC's website at sec.gov. Management cautions that you should not place undue reliance on Quanta's forward-looking statements, and Quanta does not undertake and disclaims any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statements based on new information, future events, or otherwise, and disclaims any written or oral statements made by any third party regarding the subject matter of this call. With that, I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Jim O'Neil, Quanta's President and CEO. Jim?
Thank you, Kip, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Quanta Services fourth quarter and full year 2015 earnings conference call. I will start the call with a strategic and operational overview before turning it over to Derrick Jensen, Quanta's Chief Financial Officer, who will provide a detailed review of our fourth quarter results. Following Derrick's comments, we welcome your questions. Our fourth quarter results, excluding unusual financial items, met our expectations, which I believe sets a positive tempo as we close out what was a challenging year for the company and the overall industry. Many of the challenges we faced in 2015 resulted from factors outside of our control, such as the collapse in oil prices and, in particular, its effect on the Canadian economy, several severe weather events, project delays due to a challenging permitting environment, and a sudden shift in small transmission market dynamics, all of which impacted our top line, margins, and profitability. However, there were things we should have done better. For example, the unusual occurrence of a significant project loss we incurred on the combined cycle gas power plant we're building in Alaska. That said, we booked significant mainline pipe backlog in 2015 and expect additional mainline awards this year, which should be a catalyst for profitable growth for Quanta in 2016. As we transition from a challenging 2015 into 2016, I believe it is an appropriate time to review our strategies for long-term growth and competitive differentiation, as well as discuss the near and longer-term drivers of the markets we serve. Though our end markets are experiencing some near-term challenges that create uncertainty, we believe uncertainty creates opportunity, and we are actively pursuing strategic initiatives that we believe will lay the groundwork for success in the upcoming years. A unique but critical driver of Quanta's success is the decentralized and entrepreneurial business model that Quanta embraces. Since Quanta's IPO in 1998, we have completed nearly 200 acquisitions through which we acquired some of the best operators in our industries and strategically expanded into different geographies and service offerings. As a result, we believe we have acquired the best entrepreneurial leadership and the largest skilled workforce in the markets we serve, which is the heartbeat of Quanta Services and the key to our ongoing success. The combination of acquisitions and organic growth has allowed us to build a company with a comprehensive breadth of self-perform infrastructure solutions that we believe is unmatched in our industry. More than ever before, our customers are seeking comprehensive solutions, safe project execution, and cost certainty. With our scope and scale, industry-leading safety record, consistent project performance, as well as the largest specialized workforce in our industry, we believe Quanta is uniquely positioned to serve the expanding needs of our customers. Another important differentiator is that we have significantly enhanced our engineering and project management capabilities to capitalize on market trends in our industry that we believe are shifting toward an engineering, procurement, and construction, or EPC model. Our strong balance sheet and cash flow generation, in addition to our operational capabilities, gives our customers the confidence that we can support their expanding needs. As we look ahead to 2016 and beyond, our blueprint for success is threefold. First, we must continue to exceed customer expectations in our core business, delivering projects safely, on time, and on budget. Second, we intend to leverage our core business to expand into complementary adjacent service lines and selectively expand into new geographies. This broadens the solutions we can offer our customers, provides growth opportunities, and achieves operational diversity. And third, we expect to continue to be opportunistic and explore new service lines where we can acquire a leadership position and grow shareholder value over the long term. Both organic initiatives and our acquisition program will continue to play an important role in achieving our long-term strategic growth objectives. Now I'd like to provide some near and longer-term color on our end markets and our segment expectations for this year. Last year was challenging for our electric power segment, and we expect some of those market headwinds to carry over into 2016. As a result, we expect electric power segment revenues may decline by low single digits in 2016 versus 2015. We will anticipate continued growth in sub-transmission and distribution work this year. We expect our volume of large transmission revenues to decline in 2016, particularly compared to the first half of 2015, as large project activity was fairly robust at that time. However, we believe large transmission project delays due to regulatory and permitting headwinds are temporary and that growth could resume in the second half of 2016, although timing is uncertain. That said, we continue to have a positive multi-year outlook for the large transmission market based on the projects we have in backlog as well as future opportunities we're aware of and pursuing today. With the exception of 2015, our electric segment operating income margins have exceeded 10% in every year since 2008. Our 2016 guidance contemplates a range between 8% and 9% to reflect the current market challenges. We remain focused on returning this segment to historical operating income margin levels of at least 10%. We are in a complex, fluid environment where some of our markets are growing at record levels while others are going through challenges. We are proactively addressing these challenges by adjusting our cost structure where appropriate, by making headcount reductions, and by shifting equipment and facility strategies to adjust to the current market environment. This management team is committed to returning margins to historical levels. However, we are mindful not to compromise our core capabilities. We remain ready to capitalize on the larger, more complex transmission opportunities that we are pursuing. That said, the end market drivers that underpin our positive multi-year outlook remain firmly in place. The North America power grid continues to age, and reliability challenges continue to increase despite the increased capital deployed into transmission and distribution upgrades during this decade. To that end, the C3 Group, an independent energy infrastructure and utility research organization, estimates that $25 to $30 billion will be spent on transmission annually in North America through 2020. Despite the Supreme Court's recent ruling to stay the EPA's clean power plant, the North America power grid generation mix continues to shift away from coal to more natural gas and renewables, and new technologies are being deployed, creating a more advanced power grid, all of which require grid expansions and enhancements. As a result, many of our key customers have robust capital programs underway focused on upgrading and expanding transmission and distribution infrastructure in the coming years. Another longer-term driver of electric transmission is FERC Order 1000. Though we did not expect the project delays resulting from our customers' adaptation to this newer regulation, we believe this is a short-term dynamic and expect FERC Order 1000 to drive significant incremental electric transmission investment in the future. We believe some of FERC Order 1000 transmission projects could be larger in scope and scale than what the industry has experienced over the past several years. But as we have stated in the past, we do not believe these programs will move to construction in a meaningful way until at least 2017. However, we have a strong base of large transmission projects in our backlog. The combined aggregate contract value of the Labrador Island Link HVDC transmission project and the Fort McMurray West transmission project alone is approximately $1.5 billion. At year end, the Labrador Island Link HVDC transmission project was approximately 22% complete. And the Fort McMurray West transmission project isn't expected to start construction until 2017 and should finish in 2019. We also have numerous strategic alliances with several customers that have robust multi-year electric transmission investment programs. We believe our oil and gas segment outlook is also promising, as momentum continues to build, driven primarily by mainline and natural gas distribution and integrity markets. The mainline market is a very active environment, and we expect significant mainline construction activity this year. So far in the first quarter, we have either signed contracts or in the final stages of negotiations on approximately $400 million of additional mainline projects. We currently have two mainline projects, both in Canada, that commenced construction late in the fourth quarter, and we expect a significant number of mainline projects to begin construction over the next several quarters. We expect most of the mainline activity over the next several years will be related to natural gas pipeline projects, driven primarily by coal-to-gas power generation switching and increasing demand from commercial and residential customers due to the low price and abundance of natural gas. The natural gas mainline programs fall under FERC jurisdiction, and therefore many have had fewer state permitting issues and approval delays. We have observed permitting delays on several oil mainline projects. We recently had one project delayed indefinitely due to state permitting issues, and we have subsequently removed this project from our year-end backlog. While an extended period of low oil prices could create challenges to mainline pipe projects, it is important to note that the delays we are seeing for oil mainline projects are predominantly due to extended state approval processes and not low oil prices. We continue to track billions of dollars of additional mainline pipe projects, and we now expect more project activity in 2017 and 2018 than we did previously. We are working with several key customers to ensure that they have adequate resources to accomplish their capital program objectives, and we will remain disciplined on pricing and contract terms. With respect to other key services we provide in the oil and gas infrastructure services segment, pipeline and hazardous material safety administration regulations should continue to drive opportunities in the natural gas distribution market as customer integrity programs continue to accelerate. Many of our customers are seeking expanded service offerings where we can provide program management and construction capabilities over larger replacement programs. We have expanded our customer footprint in both Canada and the United States because of this and expect growth opportunities to continue for the next several years. We continue to expect challenges in areas of our business that are sensitive to the current low oil price environment, primarily in Australia, the Canadian oil sands, and our offshore Gulf of Mexico operations. That said, we expect any incremental softness in these areas to be more than offset by the growth in mainline revenues this year and beyond. As a result of these growth opportunities, we believe our oil and gas segment revenues can grow in the low to mid-teens range this year. Margins in our oil and gas segment have improved each year since 2007, with the exception of 2015. On our past conference calls, we have communicated to you that the proper complement of mainline pipe work and solid execution, we believe this segment should operate in the 9 to 12% operating income range, which we still believe to be true. However, our 2016 guidance reflects an operating income margin range for the segment of 5.5 to 7%. Several factors led us to project margins below the 9% operating range for the segment this year. First, the volume of midstream gathering work is forecasted to be down significantly this year due to the reduced rig count in North America. A prolonged oil price environment and bottlenecks with moving natural gas from the Marcellus and Utica shales due to the lack of takeaway infrastructure are the primary cause. Midstream gathering work has been a recurring revenue base that augmented our mainline pipe workforce while mainline activities were at low levels. Until our mainline pipe projects ramp into construction, we forecast that near-term segment margins could be pressured. Second, if mainline projects ramp up as expected this year, we will mobilize multiple spreads consisting of several thousand people and a complement of equipment in a very short period of time. We are being prudent with our margin expectations and until these projects transition and are in full construction. Finally, while we expect our operations that are impacted by the low price of oil to be profitable this year, it will be difficult for these businesses to generate margins higher than mid-single digits, which will affect our overall segment margins. We're aggressively taking steps to right-size these operations to operate profitably in the current environment, which will be an ongoing process. As a result, we anticipate taking a $3 to $4 million restructuring charge in the first quarter, which we have included in our 2016 guidance. In summary, while we have experienced challenges in 2015, we expect profitable growth in 2016, largely from contributions from mainline pipe construction and the non-reoccurrence of the meaningful project losses we had in 2015. We believe the current dynamics impacting the electric power segment are short-term, and we have significant projects in backlog and are also working with several customers on future large transmission project opportunities that will play out over a multi-year period. During my 17 years here at Quanta, I have been through several market down cycles, and in each situation, whether the telecom meltdown in 2001 and 2002 or the financial crisis in 2008 to 2009, Quanta has emerged a stronger, better company with improved competitive position within the industry. I expect the same result as we move through our current industry challenges. We continue to execute on strategies that position Quanta for both near and long-term growth, and we are confident in our ability to continue to deliver the customer-driven solutions that have made us the industry leader. As we close out 2015 with this call, I want to thank our employees, who I believe are the very best in the industry and are the primary reason we consistently differentiate ourselves from our competitors in an ever-changing market environment. With that, I'll turn the call over to Derek Jensen, our CFO, for his review of our financial results. Derek?
Thanks, Jim, and good morning, everyone. today we announced revenues of $1.9 billion for the fourth quarter of 2015 compared to $2.03 billion in the prior year's fourth quarter. Net loss from continuing operations attributable to common stock was $2.6 million, or a loss of 2 cents per diluted share. These results compared to net income from continuing operations attributable to common stock of $60.4 million, or 27 cents per diluted share in the fourth quarter of 2014. Adjusted diluted earnings per share from continuing operations as presented in today's press release was 30 cents for the fourth quarter of 2015 as compared to 48 cents for the fourth quarter of 2014. Our fourth quarter results were impacted by approximately 25 cents per diluted share of net impairment charges. These charges included asset impairments of $58.5 million or 27 cents per diluted share, primarily associated with goodwill and intangible asset impairment charges associated with lower forecasted oil and gas services revenues for our Gulf of Mexico operations and certain Australian operations due to the extended low commodity price environment. These charges were partially offset by tax benefits of $4.2 million, or 2 cents per diluted share, associated with the realization of a previously unrecognized deferred tax asset related to our investment in a foreign subsidiary. Also, net income from continuing operations attributable to common stock for the fourth quarter of 2014 was negatively impacted by a $30.3 million net of tax charge, or 14 cents per diluted share, for a provision for long-term contract receivable associated with change orders on a 2012 electric power transmission project that were ultimately settled earlier this year. Net loss attributable to common stock for the fourth quarter of 2015 was $5.1 million, or a 3 cent loss per diluted share. This compares to net income attributable to common stock of $66.6 million, or 30 cents per diluted share in the fourth quarter of 2014. The decrease in consolidated revenues in the fourth quarter of 2015 as compared to the same quarter of last year was primarily due to a decrease in revenues from our large electric transmission and mainline projects, which were adversely affected by reduced customer spending and delays in project timing due to regulatory and permitting issues. In addition, consolidated revenues were negatively impacted by approximately 2.5% when compared to the fourth quarter of 2014, when quantifying the estimated impact of changes in foreign exchange rates between the quarters. Partially offsetting these decreases was the favorable impact of approximately $70 million in revenues generated by acquired companies, primarily in our oil and gas infrastructure segment. Our consolidated gross margin was 11.7% in the fourth quarter of 2015, as compared to 15.4% in the fourth quarter of 2014. This decrease was primarily a result of the negative impact of lower revenues from mainline and large electric transmission projects, both of which typically carry higher margins than certain other types of projects. Also impacting our gross margin for the quarter was $19.3 million of incremental project losses related to a power plant project in Alaska, which is expected to be completed in mid-2016. These incremental costs on the project were largely due to differences in build requirements versus the original engineering, and we are pursuing specific engineering claims to recover a portion of these costs. However, the benefit of potential recovery on these claims has not yet been reflected in our estimates as of year-end. Selling, general, and administrative expenses, as presented in this quarter's earnings release, were $151.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2015, reflecting a decrease of $3.2 million as compared to the fourth quarter of 2014. This decrease is primarily due to $6 million in lower salaries and benefits costs associated with the level of operations in 2015, partially offset by $3.5 million in higher professional fees. Selling, general, and administrative expenses, as presented in this release, as a percentage of revenues, were 8% in the fourth quarter of 2015, as compared to 7.6% in the fourth quarter of 2014. This increase was primarily attributable to the decline in revenues and its negative impact on the absorption of consolidated overhead costs. To further discuss our segment results, electric power segment revenues were $1.29 billion, reflecting a decrease of $72.6 million quarter over quarter, or approximately 5.3%. Lower revenues were a result of reduced customer spending and delays in projects due to regulatory and permitting issues associated with large electric transmission projects. Foreign currency exchange rates also negatively impacted revenues in this segment by approximately $31 million for the fourth quarter of 2015. These negative factors were partially offset by the contribution of approximately $25 million in revenues from acquired companies, as well as increased activity from smaller transmission and distribution projects. Operating margin in the electric power segment decreased slightly to 6.8% in the fourth quarter of 2015 as compared to 7.4% in last year's fourth quarter. The decrease in margin was primarily due to the previously mentioned incremental loss recorded during the quarter on the power plant project, lower revenues from higher margin large electric transmission projects, as well as a $6.6 million property and equipment impairment charge related to certain international renewable energy services operations. Although these items negatively impacted the operating margins for 4Q15, for comparative purposes, the fourth quarter of 2014 was also impacted by the previously mentioned charge to a provision for long-term contract receivable. As of December 31, 2015, 12-month backlog for the electric power segment decreased 2.3%, and total backlog increased 1.2% when compared to September 30, 2015. The decrease in 12-month backlog was primarily due to burn on existing projects, along with the negative impact from changes in foreign currency exchange rates. Total backlog increased due to the inclusion of two Latin American telecom concession awards, as well as the estimated contribution to total backlog for the renewal of certain MSAs, slightly offset by the impact of foreign currency exchange rates. Oil and gas segment revenues decreased quarter over quarter by $55.8 million or 8.4% to $607.8 million in 4Q15. This decrease was primarily due to the timing of when large mainline projects moved to construction, as well as reduced demand for certain of our oil and gas services due to lower oil prices and their impact on customer spending. Also, changes in foreign currency translation rates negatively impacted revenues contributed by our international operations in this segment by approximately $19 million. Partially offsetting these decreases were revenue contributions of approximately $45 million from acquired companies, as well as increased revenues from distribution services. Operating income for the oil and gas segment as a percentage of revenues decreased to 3.9% in 4Q15 from 8.1% in 4Q14. This decrease in operating income was primarily due to a decline in mainline revenues, which typically yield higher margins, as well as lower margins on those mainline projects actually under construction due to typical project variability. Also, contributing to this decrease was lower demand for services associated with certain operations as a result of lower oil prices and permitting delays, which negatively impacted this segment's ability to cover fixed costs. 12-month backlog for the oil and gas infrastructure services segment decreased by $184.7 million, or 8.9%, and total backlog decreased to $336.9 million, or 9.9%, when compared to September 30, 2015. These decreases were due to the removal of a mainline project from year-end backlog that Jim referenced in his prepared comments, burn on existing contracts, as well as the impact of foreign currency exchange rates between the periods. Corporate and unallocated costs increased $51.5 million in the fourth quarter of 2015 as compared to 4Q14 as a result of the $51.9 million charge associated with the previously mentioned goodwill and intangible asset impairment. Cash flows from operating activities of continuing operations for the year ended December 31, 2015, provided approximately $618.2 million, and net capital expenditures were approximately $183.8 million, resulting in approximately $434.4 million of free cash flow, as compared to free cash flow of approximately $15 million for the year ended December 31, 2014. The increase in cash flows from operating activities from continuing operations was partially due to decreased working capital requirements associated with a decrease in the number of large electric transmission jobs ramping up this year as compared to last year, the receipt of approximately $87 million in a project prepayment for a project with production beginning in 2016, and the receipt of a $65 million cash payment for the Sunrise PowerLink project receivable in the first quarter of 2015. Also, cash flows related to discontinued operations for the fourth quarter of 2015 were negatively impacted by a payment of approximately $134 million associated with taxes payable from the gain on the sale of Sunesis. DSOs were 75 days at December 31, 2015, compared to 85 days at September 30, 2015, and 84 days at December 31, 2014. This decrease is primarily due to the impact at December 31, 2015, of the inclusion of the $87 million project prepayment discussed previously and strong collections in the fourth quarter of 2015. DSOs at December 31, 2014 were negatively impacted by the inclusion of the $65 million Sunrise PowerLink project receivable and the impact of acquisition working capital balances late in the fourth quarter of 2014, for which there were no material corresponding fourth quarter revenues. Investing cash flows during the fourth quarter of 2015 were impacted by aggregate cash consideration paid of approximately $9 million net of cash acquired related to the closing of one acquisition in Canada during the quarter. Financing cash flows during the fourth quarter of 2015 came from net borrowings of $131.3 million under our credit facility, partially used to fund the repurchase of 3.6 million shares of our common stock for approximately $76.8 million. To recap our share repurchase activity, we repurchased a total of 59.3 million shares for a value of approximately $1.46 billion during the year ended December 31, 2015. We've also paid $150 million under an accelerated share repurchase arrangement, the ASR, entered into on August 10, 2015, for shares expected to be delivered upon final settlement of the ASR in April of this year. At December 31, 2015, we had approximately $128.8 million in cash. At the end of the year, we had about $307 million in letters of credit and bank guarantees outstanding to secure our casualty insurance program and other contractual commitments, and we had $466.9 million of borrowings outstanding under our credit facility. As previously announced, we increased our credit facility in December 2015 to $1.81 billion and extended maturity to December 2020. Favorable market conditions allowed us to maintain competitive pricing and structure, including increased capacity to fund operations outside of the U.S. As such, we opportunistically amended the credit facility with the increase in commitments, providing for approximately $1.16 billion of liquidity as of December 31, 2015. Turning to guidance, throughout 2015, we have evaluated whether or not providing quarterly earnings guidance is beneficial given the short-term volatility that can occur due to the variability in project timing and other impact factors that impact earnings from period to period. As we move into 2016, we will only provide annual guidance and will adjust our expectations as we move through the year. For the year end of 2016, we expect consolidated revenues to range between $7.5 billion and $8 billion. This range contemplates electric power segment revenues ranging from a decline of around 5% at the low end of our guidance to year-over-year revenues in the segment remaining flat at the high end of our estimates, with the remaining difference in revenues coming from growth in the oil and gas segment. As it relates to seasonality, I would generally assume usual seasonality through the year, with the first quarter being the lowest with respect to revenues and margins. We would expect revenue and margin improvement sequentially in the second quarter and again in the third quarter, with the third quarter being the strongest quarter of the year. I would assume revenues and margins in the fourth quarter fall somewhere between the second and third quarter. Of note, we expect a more pronounced difference between the quarters of 2016 than we have experienced in recent years. The slowing of the Canadian economy, reduced activity in the Canadian oil sands, and the timing of project starts has reduced the seasonal offsets or flattening that Canadian revenues have provided in the first and second quarter over the past few years. This, coupled with lower large electric transmission and mainline project revenues compared to the first quarter of last year, causes us to estimate that our first quarter revenues could potentially decline up to 10%. On the other hand, we expect a sizable ramp in revenues in the third quarter as we expect a significant number of mainline projects to begin moving to construction in the second and third quarters of this year. For 2016, we believe margins will continue to be at levels lower than our historical expectations, with electric power somewhere in the 8 to 9% range and oil and gas margins between 5.5% and 7%. Jim commented in his prepared remarks as to the primary factors affecting these margin estimates. In addition, largely due to the ramp in revenues I spoke of earlier, we expect margins to reflect a fair degree of seasonality with a more pronounced effect through the year in oil and gas, due largely due to the timing of mainline project starts. Our markets remain in a fluid environment, with some areas of our business growing and others having challenges. As it relates to recent actions taken by management to improve margins, we have made headcount adjustments at our corporate office, as well at various operating units, as further evidenced by the restructuring costs associated with our offshore operations expected in the first quarter, the shutdown of our Middle East operations, which led to the fourth quarter tax benefit, as well as the right sizing of our international operations, which included the impairment of certain renewable energy assets in the fourth quarter. These are just a few examples of our focus on adjusting the business to return margins to our target levels. We would estimate that interest expense will be between $15 and $20 million for 2016 and are currently projecting our GAAP tax rate for 2016 to be between 36.5% and 37.5%. Also, our annual 2016 guidance reflects the current foreign exchange rate environment. Continuing movement of foreign exchange rates in the future could make comparisons to prior periods difficult and cause actual financial results to differ from guidance. For purposes of calculated diluted earnings per share for the 12 months end of 2016, we're assuming 156.5 million weighted average shares outstanding. Our estimates include a projected reduction of approximately 10 million shares in April of 2016, which is the estimated settlement date of the ASR program and when final settlement of the required shares to be delivered is anticipated to take place. There are many factors that can influence our estimate of the final number of shares anticipated to be delivered under the ASR program, including an option and further fluctuations in the stock price. We currently anticipate GAAP diluted earnings per share from continuing operations for the year to be between $1.30 and $1.50, and anticipate non-GAAP diluted earnings per share from continuing operations to be between $1.58 and $1.78. Our forecast of non-GAAP measures are estimated on a basis similar to the calculations of historical adjusted diluted earnings per share from continuing operations presented in our release. CapEx for all 2016 should be approximately $200 million to $220 million. This compares to CapEx for all of 2015 of $210 million. Despite the challenges we experienced in 2015, we have several significant accomplishments that financially position us well for the future. The sale of our fiber optic licensing operations unlocked significant value and generated significant after-tax proceeds. Along with these proceeds, we utilized record free cash flow and availability under our credit facility to repurchase nearly $1.5 billion of our common stock in 2015, and an additional $150 million has been paid under the ASR, which effectively recapitalized our balance sheet and improved our cost of capital. In addition, we increased the capacity and extended the maturity date of our senior secured revolving credit facility, increasing liquidity to assist in achieving strategic objectives that we believe will continue to generate shareholder value. We closed 11 acquisitions during 2015 for an aggregate consideration consisting of $110.4 million in cash and $10.1 million in securities, which enhanced our electric power and oil and gas infrastructure service capabilities. We expect to continue to maintain our strong balance sheet and financial flexibility and be positioned for continued internal growth and to execute on strategic initiatives. Overall, our capital priorities remain the same, with the focus on ensuring adequate resources for working capital and capital expenditure growth and an opportunistic approach towards acquisitions, investments, and the repurchase of Quanta stock. This concludes our formal presentation, and we'll now open the line for Q&A. Operator?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Okay, we'll now take the first question from Dan Manis from Avondale Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, good morning, Dan.
Great. First question relates to backlog in the oil and gas segment. Backlog obviously down sequential. If I rewind to the Q3 call, you guys talked about $1 billion worth of mainline opportunities that were in discussions. Now you're talking about $400 million in backlogs down. So I'm wondering, either did something, how material was the project you removed? alternatively, you know, were some of the things you were negotiating before, have they been pushed out?
I would characterize the environment, Dan, it continues to be robust. There's still billions of dollars of pipe mainline opportunities that are out there that we're bidding. The project that we removed from backlog was sizable. I'm not going to quantify it, but it was a sizable project. And that did impact the fourth quarter backlog decline, obviously, in oil and gas. But, you know, with that said, I think, you know, it's a short-term dynamic, and I think backlog in that segment, and quite frankly in both segments, will continue to be strong going forward. We're going to have some seasonality baked in and some fluctuations that do occur. But, yeah, some of the contracts are taking a little bit longer to negotiate, but we do expect the mainline backlog to continue to increase over time.
Got it. And then just switching over to the electric segment, you talked about, you know, maybe hope for an improvement in the second half. Is that based on, you know, large projects actually moving into construction in the second half, or is that more a better bidding environment in the second half of 16 on large projects leading to revenue in 17?
It's a little bit of both, and we do expect to see more large project activity as we move into the second half of this year. We anticipate that, although, you know, our visibility still isn't, you know, crystal clear. But we do expect both backlog, the margin environment to improve and backlog opportunities for backlog and large projects to improve as well.
Sounds good. Thanks for the color.
Okay, we'll now take the following question from Tahira Afzal from KeyBanc Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and congrats on a good quarter in a difficult environment.
Thank you, Tahira.
Jim's first question is, can you give us an idea of how much you're expecting the shale business to fall off? You know, we're estimating in the model that we built for you something fairly dramatic. Would love to get a sense to just see how conservative or how balanced you're being there.
You know, most of our shale activity was in the Northeast, in the Marcellus, and in the Utica. The problem is because the gas is trapped, there's not enough takeaway capacity. There have been fewer wells being drilled because they can't get the gas out. And so, subsequently, there's less gathering work to be done. I do think that problem will take care of itself once we start building takeaway capacity. But we are expecting levels of gathering to be down significantly this year compared to what we've seen the past few years. I would guess probably half the volume. But the segment revenues should still grow because we do think our LDC markets and our mainline markets will grow and make up for that downturn. But it does create some volatility in earnings in particular when you haven't ramped up significantly in mainline.
Right.
We were using, that was a good stable, baseline of work that we were doing on gathering that was recurring revenue year-round that's now at a lower level. So it's going to have some impact on margins until we ramp up on mainline in a meaningful way.
Got it. Okay. And then on the transmission side, Jim, the optimism again, and maybe I'm asking the same question as Dan in a sense, but, you know, the ramp you expect potentially in the second half, let's say you don't see it, how does, you know, what would the variation from your current forecast be if you assume no ramp or no new large projects in the second half?
Well, let me just be clear. We have very little uncommitted for large transmission projects at the midpoint of our guidance. So,
perfect.
You know, so that's, I mean, I think that's enough said there. I mean, I don't think we're getting too optimistic in our transmission forecast. When we say we expect it's a ramp, qualitatively, that really isn't baked in at the midpoint of our guidance because I don't have the visibility. If it does begin to ramp, then we do better than we expect. You know, it would be more toward the upper end of our guidance. But we're not betting on it right now.
Perfect. Because
of our past history and trying to predict transmission, it's just difficult with the permitting challenges and so forth at this point in time to try to predict what's going to happen in the second half of the year.
Got it. Okay, that's helpful. And congrats again, Jim.
Okay, thanks, Tahira.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please limit yourself to asking one question. The next question will come from Matt Duncan from Stephens Inc. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Matt.
So Jim, the first question, I want to go back to the question about the project that was taken out of backlog. I appreciate you guys don't want to size that for obvious reasons, so let me ask it a little bit differently. Would that segment's backlog have been down had you not removed that project?
Yes, it would have been down.
Okay. And then in terms of the funding constraints that we're all hearing and seeing on the MLP side, can you quantify the impact on you guys that you're anticipating within your guidance from some of the funding issues that may crop up in that midstream segment?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily a funding issue. I think the low price of oil is obviously been a headwind to there's not as many wells being drilled. I mean, the rig count's down 75% throughout North America. And we've taken that into account in our guidance that we'll be doing less gathering going forward. Matt,
okay.
Maybe you should re-ask the question. I don't understand when you say funding.
Well, I mean, there's the potential that MLPs just aren't going to have the money to spend. So
I see.
They don't have money to spend on this kind of stuff. You know, how much
that's
going to hurt.
No, I understand. I think we've baked that in. I mean, obviously, that's something we're watching very closely. And most of our customers, fortunately, are well capitalized, that have committed contracts, and they're the larger pipeline players. But no, that is certainly something we are watching, credit risk on some of the MLPs. And we have certainly baked that into our guidance. Thank you for that.
And then last thing, and I'll hop back in the queue, just on the oil and gas segment margin guide, I mean, you know, you normally anticipate 9 to 12% there. Mainline work is the highest margin work you do there. That's the piece that's growing, yet the margin guide's 5.5 to 7. So I'm trying to better understand the drag on segment margins from the underutilization of people in other parts of your oil and gas segment, versus how much you're anticipating the mainline margins to maybe be below what they normally are as you ramp on some of these larger projects and due to the uncertainty of permitting and timing and the carrying cost of your people and equipment in that mainline segment. Can you just better help us understand how come we're seeing so much of a margin drag there?
That's a good question. And because we don't have the level of gathering work going on at this point in time in the Canadian pipelines that we typically would see the level. I mean, we are building some pipeline in Canada right now, but the level of activity isn't what it has been in the past. We're not at a ramp level now on mainline, so the first half of the year will be a drag on margins. When we do have a full complement of mainline going in the second, or particularly in the third quarter, we should see us moving into that 9 to 12% range if we execute. But for the full year, we expect it to be a drag, primarily because of the lack of gathering work that we've done over the last several years. And also, we've got about 15% of our business that has been impacted directly by oil prices, where we have operations that will be, you know, generating, we expect them to generate positive margins, but certainly nowhere near that 9 to 12% range in the areas impacted by oil and gas. So when you look at the entire segment and the dynamics that are occurring today, we feel like it'll be challenging to be in that 9% range. Now, but that is our expectation long term, and we're going to continue to make adjustments, and certainly if mainline takes off like we expect in the next several years, we do think it's possible to get into that range at some point in time. But this year is going to be challenging.
Thanks for the call, Jim. That helps.
Yeah.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. The next question will come from Noel. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Noel.
You talked about moving into adjacent markets and taking advantage of the turmoil in the market to some extent. Just want to understand, is this a meaningful shift in your acquisition strategy? That's one question. Are you looking at staying kind of within these energy-focused industries, or would you look to move outside of that? Just give us a feel, for what you're thinking, and then also maybe touch on if you're still looking at smaller bolt-on acquisitions or would maybe look at doing something larger.
Right now, our strategy is to do the bolt-ons in adjacent markets in the energy, in our energy segments. That's what we've been focused on the last couple of years, building, for example, our engineering and material management capabilities in both the oil and gas and in the electric segments. We've moved into areas like storage, made a small bolt-on acquisition in the storage space. So those are more adjacencies to help expand our customer solutions across the spectrum of what we can do. We're concentrated on our base business and execution right now. That's the most important thing. And then certainly we've done some bolt-on acquisitions in the last couple of years. I expect that to continue. But I wouldn't count out doing, this is not our focus right now, but we do continue to look at opportunities in other areas that make sense. And we're not going to make any big bet acquisition. That's not my intent. But certainly if there's opportunities to move into other areas, we will. For example, in Latin America, we've been focused on expanding our telecom operations. And we should do about $300 million there this year. And so that's an important growth opportunity for us. And that's an example of branching out into new areas.
Okay, we'll now take the next question from William Vermeer from Massim Group. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Bill.
Morning, Bill.
Hey, Jim, can you give us maybe an update on what you're seeing on the downstream market? You touched upon midstream. What are you seeing there in downstream? And secondly, one for you, Derek, you called out $3 to $4 million of restructuring for the first quarter. What's the game plan for full 2016, and how do you right-size, Quanta overall here as if we stay in this stagnation type of level for quite some time now?
Yeah, I'll go first. I mean, the downstream market right now is extremely bullish. We're extremely bullish on it. I mean, we've been greenfielding operations in the Houston Ship Channel and the refinery and petrochem area, and that business has been growing nicely for us. It's not anything material to the total company, but it's certainly a nice growth area for us. And the business is going very strong right now. Obviously, with the refineries, many of them operating at peak capacity and having expansion plans, and at a very minimum, they're refurbishing and upgrading their existing facilities. So we're doing really well there, and we continue to see that as a growth area for us.
Relative to the costs, I mean, our efforts to right-size costs are generally continuous, and so you rarely see us come through and have an aggregate restructuring type item. We've called that out relative to the first quarter. Does it not having any other forecast of other restructuring through the end of the year, does it mean that we're not still yet trying to look at it from addressing those costs, but we're not looking at, as it stands here today, as having something that is a sizable overall restructuring. We still are positioning ourselves relative to a multi-year outlook. We have a number of initiatives that are going on in our mind that are to support the long-term growth of the company. And from a timing perspective, as it stands, as Jim mentioned, from what we see relative to the contributions of Mainline in the third and fourth quarter, as well as the potential dynamics of evaluating what the market looks like in the last half of the year for a large transmission, we're still situating ourselves to support those aspects of the market as it stands today.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you.
Okay, we'll now take the next question from Andrew Kaplowitz from Group. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
So, Jim, you've talked about the expectation for low to mid-teens revenue growth in 16 in your oil and gas business. And, you know, while your total oil and gas backlog is still up double-digit nicely, your 12-month backlog isn't. So could you talk about your conviction in this kind of growth in 16 and how dependent is your revenue forecast on mainline projects that aren't booked yet?
We had a hard time with the caller here. It's breaking up. I think the question was my conviction on oil and gas segment in the backlog.
Yeah,
and
it was just
go ahead. I can hear you better now. Please repeat the question.
Okay, no, it's very simply that how dependent is your revenue forecast in oil and gas based on mainline projects that aren't in backlog yet?
We've got in our forecast on mainline, I would say that with the projects that we have at backlog at year end, plus the projects that I mentioned that we have either signed or that we are negotiating in the final stages of negotiating right now, that would be the midpoint of our guidance, and we have put some hedge in there for some project slippage as well.
Okay, that's helpful. And then, that was the question. And so let me just ask you about the pricing environment, especially in Canada. One of the concerns we have is that the competitive environment is leading to contractors bidding on projects with less favorable terms. How legitimate is that concern, again, especially in Canada right now?
Yeah, I would say that on the pipeline side right now, nothing has changed. If anything, it's a better environment for us because we are still in these strategic alliances that are more risk-sharing agreements that are longer term, where the customer is wanting us to meet their resource needs over a multi-year period, and that tends to be a more teaming type approach on the contracts and not a bid and buy situation that year in when it's a one-off project. So I would say there's been no change in the overall approach to contracting or the risks that we're willing to take in this environment, even in Canada, because there's so much pipeline work to be built going forward.
And the same electric transmission, Jim?
Electric transmission, I would say it's more challenging in Canada right now because there's fewer projects out there. So it's a more challenging environment. Canada is a challenge right now, but we do think that it'll recover, but it's going to be a difficult 16 in Canada.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll now take the next question from John Rogers from D.A. Davidson. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, John.
Morning. Hey, Jim, just back on the pipeline business for a second. The improvement that you're expecting, both in bookings and margins into the second half, how much oil work is in those assumptions, or is it all gas? And give us a little color there.
It's not all gas, but it's certainly predominantly gas. And most of it, frankly, is moving gas in the Midwest and Northeast markets and in Eastern Canada. And also along the Eastern Seaboard in general. So, I could say there's projects in the Southeast as well. So it's mostly natural gas. I would say probably two-thirds to maybe three-quarters. You know, I think that would probably be the breakdown.
Okay. And there's a lot of reports about a number of these big projects going forward, but we haven't yet seen a lot of contract awards, but we're seeing schedules that they're expected to start up, you know, by May, June of this year. When do these projects have to go into contract to meet those schedules?
Well, I mean, when projects can move quickly to construction once contracts are signed. Projects can move quickly to construction once contracts are signed. And I don't think you're going to get a lot of pre-notification. It's just, I just don't think there's going to be a lot of talk about what projects we're looking at and what the opportunity is until we actually sign a contract and move to construction. So, it's not unusual that you're hearing about a lot of projects moving, but you don't hear a lot from contractors about those projects until they move to construction. That's the approach we're going to take. But certainly there are several projects that we are working on that we've been awarded that we plan on moving to construction on in the second quarter and third quarter in particular.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Jeff Volsten from JP Mortgage. Please go ahead.
This is Sangeeta for Jeff. My question is about the Gulf of Mexico impairment charge that you took in the fourth quarter. Can you tell us if you would need to take another charge in 2016, let's say if oil prices stayed at $30? And also about your Alaska Power project, if you think you've booked most of the loss that you need to, or can we see more of it in 2016? Thanks.
I'll tell you that when we looked at our forecast in the area for the companies in the areas that are impacted by oil and gas, at our midpoint, we took oil prices that are in the current environment. We didn't take the models from any of these third-party firms that say oil is going to be at $40 by the end of the year. So, I mean, we're saying our base case is this current environment extended. So I hope we don't have to take I think we're hopefully done with the impairments because we feel like we're right-sized and our forecasts are geared toward the current environment that we live in today, extended over a longer period of time. And then the second question.
Yeah, relative to MLP, I'll add just a bit of color also though to Jim's comment. That is that when we evaluated our impairment, we did look at it as a base case, but at the same time, we looked at various scenarios, including low cases, and we weighted those things accordingly to ensure that we had adequately taken into consideration potential volatility in the space. And then as well as relative to MLP, we have gone through and like we do at every period when it comes to looking at revenue recognition and try to go through and look at what our estimates to complete are based upon what we believe is a probable outcome. And so as we sit here today, we have gone through and done a bottoms-up approach, and from that end, we believe that as we sit here that we have booked everything that was of a probable loss on that project as of year end.
A little more color on MLP. I mean, there were some unforeseen conditions that required some engineering and scope changes, and we do feel that we have a good case to pursue recovery for a significant amount of that. But certainly, the most important thing right now is to get that project completed, and it's scheduled to complete in the second quarter of this year.
Okay, that's great. And can I ask a follow-up on free cash flow and your potential use for that? If you plan, if you have a share buyback program beyond your ASR for the rest of the year, or if you plan to hold on to your free cash flow for acquisitions?
Yeah, actually, we have a fairly limited amount available under our current program. Based upon the stock repurchases we made through 2015, we only have about $50 million remaining under our current program. If we were to pursue anything relative to additional repurchases, we would need to have further board authorization, which we do not have as we stand here today. When we look at free cash flow for 2016, I do expect to have a fair amount of draws of working capital to support the growth as we go into the second and third quarter that Jim has spoken to. So I actually would tell you that I would expect to have a very limited free cash flow into the first portion of this year, and it all basically dependent upon how the fourth quarter goes from seasonality, because, again, most of it would be there to support the overall growth.
That's great. Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from Jamie Cook from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. I guess a couple questions. One, I guess I'm still trying to reconcile the margin guidance for E&P for 2016 versus 2015. You know, if you take out the noise that you had in 2015 and assume a more normalized margin, it's, you know, 2016, I guess, just seems light to me. So can you just help me understand, you know, what you're assuming in terms of large transmission mix in 2016 versus 2015, you know, or is it more sort of competitive pressures? And then I guess the follow-up would be, Derek, I think, or Jim, last quarter you guys talked about if you didn't see business picking up, you could take a – you would be a little more assertive on the cost-cutting front, and in a, you know, suboptimal top-line market, you could sort of get to the 10% margin. What would you need to see to be more aggressive on the cost-cutting side to improve margins?
Okay.
Like if those large transmission projects don't pick up in the back half of the year like you're expecting, should we expect restructuring, and at what point would you take those projects out of backlog?
And this is a good question, and we will continue. We have and will continue to make adjustments. And, yeah, I mean, if transmission doesn't materialize in the second half of the year, I mean, we expect margins to continue over time to get back to the 10% range. I mean, Canada is a big issue right now. Canada's challenged. We do have less big projects going on right now, especially compared to the first half of last year. And the mix of smaller projects to larger projects is certainly back to levels that we had in 2010. With that said, we have a significant amount of transmission and backlog that we will need to execute on in 2017. We have to maintain some of our core capabilities and not be short-sighted. We've got that large project, the Westmac project, that we've got to execute on, the concession we won in Alberta. And, again, we're very early still on the Nalcor job, and we expect other awards to come out that will be sizable in the coming years. And so I don't want to be short-sighted and cut all of our capabilities, but we do have a sense of urgency to return margins to historical levels, and we will continue to make necessary adjustments. We have and will continue to make necessary adjustments to improve margins over time.
Okay. Thanks. I'll get back in queue.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll now take the following question from Visha Shah from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi. This is Chad Dillard on for Visha.
Good morning.
Morning. So if I take your 12-month backlog and compare it to the midpoint of your guide, you get about $2.5 billion that needs to be booked. So I was just curious to get your sense on, like, what sort of, like, when would you need to actually book these projects to hit your guidance?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any one answer to that. I mean, I think we book backlog every day, and we've taken that into account when we evaluate our uncommitted business in everything that we do, the day-to-day book and burn work and the large project environment. I think one of the key things that I mentioned today is that on your more volatile projects where backlog is, you have the less visibility on backlog, or your larger projects, and we've assumed very little uncommitted electric transmission large projects at the midpoint of our guidance, and we're comfortable that we have on the main line guidance at the midpoint that we have the work booked or either in 12-month backlog, recently booked in the first quarter, or that we're in final negotiations on projects, and that's your midpoint. And so I think the other work is really book and burn work in areas of our business that have been accelerating over the last several years, and we don't expect any change in the sub-transmission business, and electric distribution, and our LDC business. All of that, you know, it equates to probably half of our consolidated revenues, and that business is continues to accelerate, and that's your day-to-day work that you probably have less committed, but you book that every day, and that momentum continues as well.
Got it. And how should we think about operating cash flow in 2016? Can you just talk about, you know, what contribution from working capital you do expect, as well as any advance payments that we should be aware of?
Yeah, my earlier commentary, I think, was that based upon the fact that we do have such a seasonal ramp, we do think we'll have a draw of capital out of the business to support that growth. I think that you'll see the levels of debt continue to increase on average balances between the first quarter into the second, into the third, as we set up to fund the working capital that would be required to maintain that growth. Fourth quarter is going to be highly dependent. I mean, it's normal seasonality such that the fourth quarter would roll down some and would therefore be a strong cash flow period, much like you saw in the fourth quarter of this year. But the timing of when that can happen is very difficult to predict. I do believe that ultimately we will have free cash flow, but I think you'll see most of it being very back-end loaded and highly seasonality dependent.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll now take the last question from Justin Hook from Robert W. Baird. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for squeezing me in here. I guess, you know, the parting question would be, you know, the commentary on oil and gas, and we've talked a lot about 2016, and it sounds like the guidance mostly supported by the backlog you already have plus the bookings in the first quarter. I guess I'm thinking, you know, longer term, as we look into 2017, I mean, how dependent is growth in that business on production levels? And the reason why I ask is, you know, we see, you know, a lot of reports that show, you know, at the current production levels, you know, that there's not a lot of need for incremental pipeline in most of the shales, and we've got, you know, natural gas storage kind of at capacity here. So, I mean, is that a business that can continue to grow after 16?
Yes. I mean, I think we will continue to book backlog. The takeaway capacity is needed, whether it's oil or natural gas. There's some markets that you hear that they don't need pipeline. I can certainly understand that in some of your liquid play shales. But we have customers that have a need to move liquids out of regions to either refining centers or load centers. And in this environment, it actually reduces the cost because they cannot move enough product by pipe. It's stranded. They're having to move it by rail. And rail looks really costly right now in this environment. So both liquid, there's a need for liquid and natural gas takeaway capacity, and you will continue to see backlog grow in those areas.
So I guess the takeaway is, even if we see aggregate production levels come down, pipeline capacity can still grow.
In certain regions, you'll see pipeline capacity grow.
Thank you.
Or the need for pipeline capacity. Like from the Canadian oil sands, there's a desperate need to build takeaway capacity by our customers. All right. Well, thank you. I'd like to thank you all for participating in our fourth quarter 2015 conference call. We appreciate your questions and your ongoing interest in Quanta Services. Thank you, and this concludes our call for today.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. Thank you.